Utopia is an island in the South Seas whose inhabitants are ruled by King Paramount I. Our story begins in the gardens of King Paramount's palace, set in a picturesque and luxuriant tropical landscape backed by the sea. Here, in a grove under a cloudless sky, we find a group of young Utopian maidens lazing under the palm trees, thoroughly enjoying themselves in a lotus-eating fashion.
News. His Majesty's eldest daughter, Princess Sarah, who left our shores 5 years since to go to England, the greatest, the most powerful, the wisest country in the world, has taken a high degree at Girton and is on her way home again. Having achieved a complete mastery over all the elements that have tended to raise that glorious country to her present preeminent position among civilized nations.
Then in a few months, Utopia may hope to be completely anglicized.
Absolutely, and without a doubt.
We are very well as we are. What have we to gain by the great change that is in store for us?
What have we to gain? English institutions, English tastes, and, oh, English fashion.
England has made herself what she is because in that favored land, everyone has to think for himself. Here we have no need to think because our monarch anticipates all our wants and our political opinions are formed for us by the journals to which we subscribe. Oh, think how much more brilliant this dialogue would have been if we had been accustomed to exercise our reflective powers. They say that in England the conversation of the very meanest is a coruscation of impromptu epigram.
Oh, la Stop, stop, I beg.
Malala galalati, caratala lalabali,
caralali poo. Stop it, stop it.
My lord, Tarara, I am surprised at you. Are you not aware that his majesty, in his despotic acquiescence, with the emphatic wish of his people, has ordered that the utopian language shall be banished from his court, and that all communications shall henceforth be made in the English tongue?
Yes, I'm perfectly well aware of it, although... Stop. Allow me.
A cracker? Now what's that for?
Why, I've recently been appointed public exploder to his majesty. And as I'm constitutionally nervous, I must accustom myself by degrees to the startling nature of my duties. Allow me. Thank you. I was about to say that although as public exploder I am next in succession to the throne, I nevertheless do my best to fall in with the royal decree. But when I am overmastered by an indignant sense of overwhelming wrong as I am now, I slip into my native tongue without knowing it. I'm told that in the language of that great and pure nation, England, strong expressions do not exist. Consequently, when I want to let off steam, I have no alternative but to say, lalabaleri balola, lilili kalalali poof.
But what is your grievance?
This. By our constitution, we are governed by a despot, who, although in theory absolute, is in practice nothing of the kind. Being watched day and night by two wise men, whose duty it is, on his very first lapse from political or social propriety, to denounce him to me, the public exploder. And it then becomes my duty to blow up his majesty with dynamite. Oh, allow me.
Eh? Oh.
Thank you. And as some compensation to my wounded feelings, I reign in his stead.
Yes. After many unhappy experiments in the direction of an ideal republic, it was found that what may be described as a despotism tempered by dynamite provides, on the whole, the most satisfactory description of ruler, an autocrat who dares not abuse his autocratic power.
That's the theory. But in practice, how does it act? Now, do you ever happen to see the palace peeper?
Never even heard of the journal.
Well, I'm not surprised, because His Majesty's agents always buy up the whole edition. But I have an aunt in the publishing department, and she has supplied me with a copy. Well, it actually teems with circumstantially convincing details of the king's abominable immoralities. If this high-class journal may be believed, His Majesty is one of the most heliogabalian profligates that ever disgraced an autocratic throne. And do these wise men denounce him to me? Not a bit of it. They wink at his immoralities. Under the circumstances, I really think I am justified in exclaiming, lalabaleli malola, lilili kalabale poop. Oh, I don't care. I don't care. The occasion demands it. Lalabaleli talala, kalabalani kalabalika, kalalale.
We claim to rank before the whiteness of humanity.
As gifts of head and heart, we're wasted on utility.
we're tasked to pay a proper part of great responsibility.
Our duty is to spy, upon our king's initiatives,
and keep a watchful eye, on all his eccentricities.
If ever a trick he tries, the state resolves with charity. At our decree he dies, without the least formality.
Fear no rude rebuff, or newspaper publicity.
Our word is quite enough, the rest is electricity.
A pound of dynamite,
explodes in his auriculum. It's not a pleasant sight and sight, we'll melt you the particulum.
It's all for men, confess, the king needs no admonishing.
We may say it's success, is something quite astonishing.
Of the head of it, imbued with virtues quite delectable. He might deceive and and deem himself respectable.
Of a tyrant polite,
he's a paragon quite, he's as modest and mild in his ways as a child.
And no one e'er met with an autocrat yet,
so delightfully bent to the least in the land, so glad, so glad.
Fantis, you are not in your customary exuberant spirits. What is wrong?
Scafio, I think you once told me that you have never loved.
Never. I've often marveled at the fairy influence which weaves its rosy web about the faculties of the greatest and wisest of our race. But I thank heaven I have never been subjected to its singular fascination. For, Fantis, there is that within me that tells me that when my time does come, the convulsion will be tremendous. When I love, it will be with the accumulated fervor of 66 years. But I have an ideal. A semi-transparent being filled with an inorganic pink jelly. And I have never yet seen the woman who approaches within measurable distance of it. All are opaque. Opaque.
Keep that ideal firmly before you and love not until you find her. Though but 55, I am an old campaigner in the battlefields of love. And believe me, it is better to be as you are, heart-free and happy, than as I am, eternally racked with doubting agonies. Scafio, the Princess Zara returns from England today.
My poor boy, I see it all.
Oh, Scafio, she is so beautiful. Ah, you smile, for you have never seen her. She sailed for England 3 months before you took office.
Now, tell me, is your affection requited?
I do not know. I am not sure. Sometimes I think it is, and then come these torturing doubts. I feel sure she does not regard me with absolute indifference, for she can never look at me without having to go to bed with a sick headache.
Oh, that is surely something. come, take heart, boy. Be of good cheer. Marry her, boy, if so your fancy wills, and be sure that love will come.
Then you will assist me in this?
Aye, surely, silly one, what have you to fear? We have but to say the word, and her father must consent. Is he not our very slave? Come, come, take heart. I cannot bear to see you sad.
Now I may hope indeed. Scafio, you have placed me on the very pinnacle of human joy.
Let all your doubts take wing. Our influence is great. If paramount our king presume to hesitate, put on the screw and caution him that he will rule disaster grim, that must ensue to life and limb, should he to prove this harmless whim.
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 It is, as I say, a harmless whim. A harmless whim.
Observe this doubt which I employ. When I by chance go mad with joy, what sentiment does this express? What sentiment does this express? that happiness. Of course it's up to happiness.
Your friendly aid concerned, I need no longer pine. I but to speak the word and know the maid is mine. I do not choose to be denied or wish to lose a lovely bride. If you refuse, the king decides the royal news, and woe betide.
Then woe betide.
And woe betide.
Then woe betide.
And woe betide. The royal news, and woe betide. And woe betide.
This step to use, I condescend, whene'er I choose to serve a friend. What it implies, now try to guess. What it implies, now try to guess. Typifies of selfishness,
of course he does, of course he does. He typifies of selfishness,
of course he does, of course he does, of selfishness.
The garden is deserted again, but now comes King Paramount the First, attended by guards and nobles. At the head of the procession are a number of young girls singing and dancing. With the king are his two younger daughters, Nikaya and Kaliba. They are twins, about 15 years old, very modest and demure in their appearance, dress, and manner. With eyes downcast and hands folded, they're in the care of Lady Sophie, their English gouvernante, a lady of mature years and extreme gravity of demeanor, who carries in her hand a lecturer's wand.
Tyrannic will you know, whose rule is paramount for land and sea, a presence of unutterable awe. But boldly o'er that tyrant smile, a shrivel with imperial fire, all those who it may chance to touch, who just by what I see and hear, it does not seem to interfere with a burning crime of much. Round of health to strike, resistless when our tyrant under heels. We often wonder what obstructions like and how a contradicted monarch feels. But as it is our royal will, our royal sails to set and trim, Suit you whatever wind may blow. What but this contradiction deals, and our thwarted man appeals, we probably shall never know. It is your wish emphatic that all utopia shall henceforth be modeled upon that glorious country called Great Britain, to which some add, but others do not, Ireland. That being so, as you insist upon it, we have arranged that our two younger daughters, who have been finished by an English lady, a grave and good and gracious English lady, shall daily be exhibited in public, that all may learn what, from the English standpoint, is looked upon as maidenly perfection. Come hither, daughter. Thank you.
and act big, each a little bit afraid. You can glance at his glances to the danger they awaken. They repel him, and they tell him he is very much mistaken. Very, very much mistaken. Though they speak to him politely, please observe their sneering slightly, just to show he's acting vainly. This is virtue, say it plainly. Go away, young bachelor, we are not what you take us for. When addressed impertinently, English lady comes gently. Go away, young bachelor, we are not what you take us for.
English lady comes gently.
His intention, then he mentioned something definite to go on. Next recital of his title in settlement and so on. Smiling sweetly, they discreetly, after further evidences, thus invited, he delighted, gives the usual references. Don't forget the references. This is business, each is fluttered. When the offer's fairly uttered, which of them has his affection? He declined to make selection. Do they quarrel for his drop? Not a bit of it, they toss.
Requested Scapio and Fantis to be so good as to favor me with an audience this morning. Oh, here they are.
Your Majesty wished to speak with us, I believe. You needn't keep your crown on our account, you know.
I beg your pardon. I always forget that. Odd, the notion of a king not being allowed to wear one of his own crowns in the presence of two of his own subjects.
Yes, bizarre, is it not?
The most quaint, but then, it's a quaint world.
Teems with quiet fun. I often think what a lucky thing it is that you are blessed with such a keen sense of humor.
Well, you know, I find it invaluable. Do what I will, I cannot help looking at the humorous side of things, for properly considered, everything has its humorous side. Even the palace peeper. See here, another royal scandal by Junius Junior. How long is this to last? By Senex Senior.
Ribald royalty by Mercury Major.
Where is the public exploder by Mephistopheles Minor? When I reflect that all these outrageous attacks on my morality are written by me at your command, well,
It's one of the funniest things that have come within the scope of my experience.
Besides, apart from that, they have a quiet humour of their own, which is simply irresistible.
An affair, I think. Biting, trenchant sarcasm. The rapier, not the bludgeon. That's my line. But then it's so easy. I'm such a good subject. A bad king, but a good subject. Capital heading for next week's leading article. And then the stinging little paragraphs about our royal goings-on with our royal second housemaid. Delicately sub-acid, are they not?
But the crowning joke is the comic opera that you've written for us, King Tuppence or a Good Deal Less Than Half a Sovereign, in which the celebrated English tenor Mr. Wilkinson burlesques your personal appearance and gives grotesque imitations of your royal peculiarities. It is immense.
Yes, that's what I wanted to speak to you about. Now, I've not the least doubt that even that has its humorous side, too, if one could only see it. As a rule, I'm pretty quick at detecting latent humor. But I do confess that I do not quite see where it comes in this particular instance. It's so horribly personal.
Personal? Yes, of course it's personal. But consider the antithetical humor of the situation.
Yes, I don't think I quite grasped that.
No, you surprise me. Why consider? During the day, thousands tremble at your frown. During the night, from 8 to 11, thousands roar at it. During the day, your most arbitrary pronouncements are received by your subjects with abject submission. During the night, they shout with joy at your most terrible decrees. It's not every monarch who enjoys the privilege of undoing by night all the despotic absurdities he's committed during the day.
Of course, now I see it. Thank you very much. I was sure it had its humorous side, and it was very dull of me not to have seen it before. But as I said just now, it's a quaint world.
Teems with quiet fun.
Yes, properly considered, what a farce life is, to be sure.
First you're born, and I'll be bound you find a dozen strangers round you. Hello, cries the newborn baby. Where's my parents? Which may they be? Awkward silence, no reply. Puzzled baby wonders why. Father rises, bows politely. Mother smiles, but not too brightly. Doctor mumbles like a dumpling. Nurse is busy fixing something. Every symptom tends to show you're decidedly de trop.
Ho, 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 ho. I'm de totem if you spin it. If de totem wants a minute, I'll obey your head the rails. And if you fail, the duty is in it.
Grow up and you discover what it is to be a lover. Some young lady is selected, poor perhaps but well connected, whom you hail for love is blind, as the queen of fairy kind. Though she's plain, perhaps unsightly, makes her face up laces tightly. In her form your fancy traces all the gifts of all the graces. Rivals none the maiden woo. So you take her and she takes you.
Ho, 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 ho. Just beginning never ceases. If your evening time releases, on your way you blindly stray. And day by day the joke increases.
10 years later, time progresses, ties your temper, pins your tresses. And see then her chain relaxes, rates are taxed, and so are taxes. Fairy queen's no longer young, fairy queen has got a tongue. Twins have probably intruded, quite unbidden, just as you did. They're a source of care and trouble, just as you were only double. Comes at last the final stroke. Time has had its little joke. Daily driven, life has flown. You've driven near in clover. Lastly, when 60 and 10. And until then the joke is over.
Ho, 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 ho. Daily driven, white and clover. Kill your driven, daring clover. Love you and we're gone and dead. And until then the joke is over.
It's all very well. I always like to look on the humorous side of things, but I do not think I ought to be required to write libels on my own moral character. Naturally, I see the joke of it. Anybody would. But Zara's coming home today. She's no longer a child, and I confess I should not like her to see my opera, though it's uncommonly well written. And I should be sorry if the palace people got into her hands, although it's certainly smart, very smart indeed. It's almost a pity I have to buy up the whole edition, because it's really too good to be lost. And Lady Sophie, that blameless type of perfect womanhood. Great heavens, what would she say if the second housemaid business happened to meet her pure blue eyes?
My monarch is soliloquizing. I will withdraw.
No, Lady Sophie, pray don't go. Now, I'll give you 50 chances, and you won't guess whom I was thinking of.
Alas, sir, I know too well. Ah, King, it's an old, old story, and I'm well nigh weary of it. Be warned in time. From my heart, I pity you, but I am not for you.
But hear what I have to say.
It is useless. Listen. In the course of a long and adventurous career in the principal European courts, it has been revealed to me that I unconsciously exercise a weird and supernatural fascination over all crowned heads. So irresistible is this singular property that there is not a European monarch who has not implored me, with tears in his eyes, to quit his kingdom and take my fatal charms elsewhere. As time was getting on, it occurred to me that by descending several pegs in the scale of respectability, I might qualify Your Majesty for my hand. Actuated by this humane motive, and happening to possess respectability enough for 6, I consented to confer respectability enough for 4 upon your 2 younger daughters. But although I have, alas, only respectability enough for 2 left, there is still, as I gather from the public press of this country, a considerable balance in my favor.
May I ask how you came by this?
It was handed to me by the officer who holds the position of public exploder to your Imperial Majesty.
Surely, Lady Sophie, surely you are not so unjust as to place any faith in the irresponsible gabble of the society press.
I read on the authority of Senex Senior that your Majesty was seen dancing with your second housemaid on the oriental platform of the Tivoli Gardens. That is untrue?
Absolutely. Our second housemaid has only one leg.
How do you know that?
Common report, I give you my honor.
It may be so. I further read, and the statement is vouched for by no less an authority than Mephistopheles Minor, that your Majesty indulges in a bath of hot rum punch every morning. I trust I do not lay myself open to the charge of displaying an indelicate curiosity as to the mysteries of the royal dressing room when I ask if there is any foundation for this statement.
None whatever. When our medical adviser exhibits rum punch, it is as a draught, not as a fomentation. As to our bath, our valet plays the garden hose upon us every morning.
Pray spare me these unseemly details. Well, you are a despot. Have you taken steps to slay this scribbler?
Well, no, I have not gone so far as that. After all, it's the poor devil's living, you know.
It is the poor devil's living that surprises me. If this man lies, there is no recognized punishment that is sufficiently terrible for him.
That's precisely it. I am waiting until a punishment is discovered that will exactly meet the enormity of the case. I am in constant communication with the Mikado of Japan, who is a leading authority on such points. And moreover, I have the ground plans and sectional elevations of several capital punishments in my desk at this moment. Oh, Lady Sophie, as you are powerful, be merciful.
Subjected to your heavenly gift, poetical phrase. My brain is burned completely. Observe me now, no monarch I vow was ever so far afflicted.
I'm pleased with that poetical phrase. Heavenly gift.
plausible term. Contemptible worm appeals to me most strongly. To treat this test as you suggest would aid my majesty greatly.
Right alive!
Yes, father, his eyes.
Indeed, you say.
In a sort of a way.
Then have him stop.
His eyes in us.
Or trust him not.
I cannot do that. Oh, royal wreck, my favorite wreck.
Lady Sophie leaves, followed by the king, and now we see his eldest daughter, the Princess Zara. She is surrounded by the entire court and escorted by Captain Fitzbattleaxe and four troopers, all attired in the full uniform of the First Life Guards.
Zara, my beloved daughter. Why, how well you look and how lovely you have grown.
My dear father,
and my two beautiful little sisters.
Not beautiful, nice looking.
But first, let me present to you the English warrior who commands my escort and who has taken, oh, such care of me during the voyage. Captain Fitzbattleaxe.
Self-like God, self-like God. When the tempest blows and the ship went south, do you suppose you're ill?
No! Sir, you come from a country where every virtue flourishes. We trust that you will not criticize too severely such shortcomings as you may detect in our semi-barbarous society.
Sir, I have eyes for nothing but the blameless and the beautiful.
We thank you. He is really very polite.
Oh.
Lady Sophie, do not leave us.
Sir, your children are young and so far innocent. If they are to remain so, it is necessary that they be at once removed from the contamination of the present disgraceful surroundings.
Captain Fitzbattleaxe.
Sir,
your troopers appear to be receiving a troublesome amount of attention from those young ladies. I know how strict you English soldiers are, and I should be extremely distressed if anything occurred to shock their puritanical British sensitiveness.
I don't think there's any chance of that.
You think not? They won't be offended.
Oh, no, they're quite hardened to it. They get a good deal of that sort of thing, standing sentry at the Horse Guards.
It's English, is it?
It's particularly English.
Then, of course, it's all right. Pray proceed, ladies. It's particularly English. Come, my daughter, for we have much to say to each other.
Farewell, Captain Fitzbattleaxe. I cannot thank you too emphatically for the devoted care with which you have watched over me during our long and eventful voyage.
Oh, gallant soldier, brave and true, intent in field and study. I grieve to have occasioned you so very noble journey.
When a soldier seeks you, token great in charge of youth and beauty, then pleasure merely masquerades as regimental duty.
There. Tell me, Scafio, is she not beautiful? Can you wonder that I love her so passionately?
No, she is extraordinarily, miraculously lovely. Good heavens, what a singularly beautiful girl.
I knew you would say so.
What exquisite charm of manner. What surprising delicacy of gesture. Why, she's a goddess, a very goddess.
Yes, she is an attractive girl.
Attractive? Why, you must be blind. She's entrancing, enthralling, intoxicating. God bless my heart, what's the matter with me?
Yes, you promised to help me to get her father's consent, you know.
Promised? Yes, but the convulsion has come, my good boy. It is she, my ideal.
Oh.
Why, what's this? Oh, Fantis, stop me. I'm going mad. Mad with the love of her.
Scafio, compose yourself, I beg. Mm. The girl is perfectly opaque. Besides, remember, each of us is helpless without the other. Mm. You can't succeed without my consent, you know.
And you dare to threaten? Oh, ungrateful! When you came to me, palsied with love for this girl and implored my assistance, did I not unhesitatingly promise it? And this is the return you make? Out of my sight, ingrate!
Dear me, Captain Fitzbattleaxe. I'm afraid we are interrupting a tete-a-tete.
Oh, no. You come very appropriately. To be brief, we love you, this man and I. Madly, passionately.
Oh.
And we don't know how, where to settle, which of us is to marry you.
Dear Captain Fitzbattleaxe, what is to be done?
Leave it to me, I'll manage it. It is a common situation. Why not settle it in the English fashion?
The English fashion? What is that?
It's very simple. In England, when two gentlemen are in love with the same lady, and until it is settled which gentleman is to blow out the brains of the other, it is provided by the rival admirer's Clauses Consolidation Act that the lady shall be entrusted to an officer of household cavalry at stakeholder, who is bound to hand over to the survivor, on the Tontine principle, in good condition of substantial and decorative repair.
That seems very reasonable. Well, what do you say?
Shall we entrust her to this officer of household cavalry? It will give us time.
Sir, I'm not at present in a condition to think it out coolly, but if he is an officer of household cavalry, and if the princess consents...
Alas, dear sirs, I have no alternative. Under the Rivals Admirers Clauses Consolidation Act.
Good. Then that's settled.
It's understood, I think, around that by the English custom bond, I hold the lady safe and sound in trust for either rival, until you clearly testify by sword or pistol by and by, which gentlemen prefer to die. And which prefer survival? If I should die and he should live, to you without reserve I give her heart so young and sensitive and all her predilection. If he should live and I should die, I see no kind of reason why you should not, if you wish it, try to gain her young affection.
If I should die and live, to you without reserve I give her heart so young and sensitive and all her predilection. If you should live and I should die and try to gain her young affection.
My daughter, at last we are alone together.
Yes, and I'm glad we are. But I want to speak to you very seriously. Do you know this paper?
Where in the world did you get this from?
It was given to me by Lady Sophie, my sister's governess.
Lady Sophie is an angel, but I do sometimes wish she'd mind her own business. It's Rather humorous.
I see nothing humorous in it. I only see that you, the despotic king of this country, are made the subject of the most scandalous insinuations. Why do you permit these things?
Well, they appeal to my sense of humor. It's the only really comic paper in Utopia, and I wouldn't be without it for the world.
If it had any literary merit, I could understand it.
Oh, it has literary merit. Oh, distinctly, it has literary merit.
My dear father, it's mere ungrammatical twaddle.
Oh, it's not ungrammatical. I can't allow that. Unpleasantly personal, perhaps, but written with an epigrammatical point that is very rare nowadays. Very rare indeed.
Why do they represent you with such a big nose?
Huh? Yes, it is a big one. Why, the fact is that in the cartoons of the comic paper, the size of your nose always varies inversely as the square of your popularity. It's the rule.
Then you must be at a tremendous discount just now.
Oh, I think I am.
I see a notice of a new piece called King Tuppence, in which an English tenor has the audacity to personate you on a public stage. I can only say that I'm surprised that any English tenor should lend himself to such degrading personalities.
Oh, he's not really English, as it happens. He's a utopian, but he calls himself English.
Calls himself English?
Yes, bless you, they wouldn't listen to any tenor who didn't call himself English.
And you permit this insolent buffoon to caricature you in a pointless burlesque. Oh, my dear father, if you were a free agent, you would never permit these outrages.
Sarah, I admit I am not altogether a free agent. I am controlled. Nominally a despot, I am, between ourselves, the helpless tool of two unscrupulous wise men who insist on my falling in with all their wishes and threaten to denounce me for immediate expulsion if I remonstrate.
My poor father. Now listen to me. With a view to remodeling the political and social institutions of Utopia, I have brought with me six representatives of the principal causes that have tended to make England the powerful, happy, and blameless country which the consensus of European civilization has declared it to be. Place yourself unreservedly in the hands of these gentlemen, and they will reorganize your country on a footing that will enable you to defy your persecutors. They are all now washing their hands after their journey. Shall I introduce them?
My dear Zara, how can I thank you? I will consent to anything that will release me from the abominable tyranny of these two men. What ho! Without there! Summon my court without an instant's delay.
Beloved daughter, most thoughtfully has brought with her from England the types of all the causes that have made a great and glorious country what it is.
Attend to me, Utopian populace, in God the pretty island be riparian. Or, in the abstract, type of courtly grace, yet, when compared with Britain's glorious race, a diesel better than far, no barbarian.
What does it mean? What does it mean?
When Britain sounds the trump of war and Europe trembles, the army of the conqueror in prayer in the thimble, in their glorious eyes and flame idly for Rome protect us. Represents the very, very
people must allow me to present. Of all the arts and faculties and tokens ornament, he's a greater mathematician who can demonstrate his ease. That 2 and 2 are 3 or 5 or anything you please. An eminent logician who can make it clear to you that black is white when looked at from the proper point of view. A marvelous logist who'll undertake to show that yes, there's both another and a neater form of no.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, it's but another and a neater form of no. All preconceived ideas on any subject I can scout and demonstrate beyond all possibility of doubt that whether you're an honest man or whether you're a thief depends on who solicitor has given me my brief.
Yes, yes, yes. And whether you're an honest man or whether you're a thief depends on who solicitor.
But now it must be 7. Descend the stones to foreign thrones, I've largely advocated. In junior pomp, I peppermint drops, I screen it ventilated. Then mines of gold of wealth, and so successfully I floated. And thousand gold in apple stores occasionally quoted. And soon or late, I always call for stock exchange quotation. No seems too great and none too small. For success is fiction.
Respectful, to show you how you may protect your own.
terrify the simple Gaul. And how the Saxon and the Celt, they Europe's shaking blows have dealt, with Maxim gun and Norden pelt, or will when the occasion calls. If sailor like you'd play your cards, and bend your sails and lower your yards, and step your mast, you'll never want more. So we're no longer half a boat, yet we can steer and we can stoke, and thanks to coal and thanks to coke, we never run a ship ashore.
What, never?
No, never.
What, never?
Well, hardly ever.
Hardly ever run a ship ashore. Yes, 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 yes,
men form an association, if possible all peers and baronets. They start off with a public declaration to what extent they mean to pay their debt. That's called their capital. If they are wary, they will not quote it as a sum immense. The figure's immaterial, it may vary from 18 billion down to 18 cents. I should put it rather low. The good sense of doing so will be evident at once to any debtor, when it's left to you to say what amount you mean to pay. Why, the lower you can put it at, the better.
When it's left to you to say what amount you mean to pay, why, the lower you can put it at, the better.
They then proceed to trade with all who trust them, quite irrespective of their capital. It's shady, but it's sanctified by custom. Bank, railway loan, or Panama Canal, you can't embark on trading too tremendous. It's strictly fair and based on common sense. If you succeed, your profits are stupendous, and if you fail, up goes your 18 cents.
Make the money spin a spin, for you only stand to win, and you'll never with dishonesty be twitted. For nobody can know to a million or so to what extent your capital's committed. If you come to grief and creditors are craving for nothing that is planned by mortal head is certain in this vale of sorrow, saving that one's liability is limited. Do you suppose that signifies perdition? If so, you're but a monetary dunce. You merely file a winding up petition and start another company at once. Though a Rothschild you may be in your own capacity, as a company you've come to us a sorrow, but the liquidation they never mind, you needn't pay. So you start another company tomorrow,
but the liquidation they never mind, you needn't pay. So you start another company tomorrow.
It strikes us as dishonest, but it is good enough for virtuous England. The first commercial country in the world, it's good enough for us.
You just take care, please recollect, we have not been consulted.
And do I understand you that Great Britain, upon this joint stock principle, is governed?
We haven't come to that exactly, but we're tending rapidly in that direction. The day's not distant.
We will be before you. We'll go down to posterity, renowned as the first sovereign in Christendom, who registered his crown and country under the Joint Stock Companies Act of 62.
Henceforward, our fidelity, we save ourselves really. We'll go down to posterity, our sovereign all the things.
You the methodology, our wishes are to fix. You'll go down to posterity, much earlier than you think.
You go up to posterity, if I inflict the blow.
You go down to posterity, we think we ought to know.
You go up, blown up with dynamite.
You go up, of course, he will. You're right, ha, 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 ha.
Several months have passed away, and we're in the throne room of the palace. It is night, and Captain Fitzbattleaxe is singing to Princess Zara.
Zara, my beloved, bear with me. Do not laugh at my attempted sin. Repent not, mocking maid, thy girlhood's choice. The fervor of my love affects my voice. Tenor all singers above, this doesn't admit of a question. Should keep himself quiet, attend to his diet, and carefully nurse his digestion. But when he's met in love, it's certain to tell on his singing. You can't do chromatics with proper emphatics when anguish your bosom is ringing. When distracted is worried in plenty, and his pulse is 120, and his fluttering bosom the slave of mistrust is, a tenor can't do himself justice. Now observe. You see, I can't do myself justice. I could sing if my fervor were mock. It's easy enough if you're acting. But when one's emotion is born of devotion, you mustn't be over-exacting. One ought to be firm as a rock, to venture a shake in vibrato. When fervor's expected, keep cool and collected, or never attempt agitato. But of course, when his tongue is of leather, and his lips appear tasted to feather, and his sensitive palate as dry as a crusty, a tenor can't do himself justice. Now observe. Oh. It's no use, I can't do myself justice.
Why, Arthur, what does it matter? When the higher qualities of the heart are all that can be desired, the higher notes of the voice are matters of comparative insignificance. Who thinks slightingly of the coconut because it is husky? Besides, you are not singing for an engagement. You have that already.
How good and wise you are. How unerringly your practiced brain winnows the wheat from the chaff, the material from the merry incidental.
My Girton training, Arthur. At Girton, all is wheat, and idle chaff is never heard within its walls. But tell me, is not all working marvelously well? Have not our flowers of progress more than justified their name?
We have indeed done our best. Captain Corcoran and I have in concert thoroughly remodeled the sister services, and upon so sound a basis that the South Pacific trembles at the name of Utopia.
How clever of you.
Clever? Not a bit. It's as easy as possible when the Admiralty and Horse Guards are not there to interfere, and so with the others. Freed from the trammels imposed upon them by idle acts of Parliament, all have given their natural talents full play, and introduced reforms which, even in England, were never dreamt of.
But perhaps the most beneficent change of all has been effected by Mr. Goldberry, who, discarding the exploded theory that some strange magic lies hidden in the number 7, has applied the limited liability principle to individuals. And every man, woman, and child is now a company limited, with liability restricted to the amount of his declared capital. There's not a christened baby in Utopia who has not already issued his little prospectus.
Marvelous is the power of a civilization which can transmute by a word a limited income into an income limited.
Reform has not stopped here. It has been applied even to the costume of our people. Discarding their own barbaric dress, the natives of our land have unanimously adopted the tasteful fashions of England in all their rich entirety. Scafio and Francis have undertaken a contract to supply the whole of Utopia with clothing designed upon the most approved English models. And the first drawing room, under the new state of things, is to be held here this evening.
But drawing rooms are always held in the afternoon.
Ah, we've improved upon that. We all look so much better by candlelight. And when I tell you, dearest, that my court train has just arrived, you will understand that I am longing to go and try it on.
Then we must part.
Necessarily for a time.
Just as I wanted to tell you, with all the passionate enthusiasm of my nature, how deeply, how devotedly I love you.
Hush! Are these the accents of a heart that really feels? True love does not indulge in declamation. Its voice is sweet and soft and low. The west wind whispers when he woos the poplars.
To a monarch who has been accustomed to the uncontrolled use of his limbs, the costume of a British field marshal is perhaps at first a little cramping. Fitzbedlax, are you sure that this is all right? It's not a practical joke, is it? No one has a keener sense of humor than I have, but the first statutory cabinet council of Utopia Limited must be conducted with dignity and impressiveness. Now, where are the other five who sign the Articles of Association?
Sir, they are here.
Who? Gentlemen, our daughter holds her first drawing room in half an hour, and we shall have time to make our half-yearly report in the interval. I am necessarily unfamiliar with the forms of an English cabinet council. Perhaps the Lord Chamberlain will kindly put us in the way of doing the thing properly and with due regard to the solemnity of the occasion.
Certainly. Nothing simpler.
Kindly bring your chairs forward.
Captain Corcoran, sit here, and the army there, yes, and the law, Sir Bailey, and, Mr. Blushington. His Majesty will, of course, preside.
Like this? We take your word for it that this is all right. You are not making fun of us. This is in accordance with the practice of the Court of St. James's.
Well, it is in accordance with the practice of the Court of St. James's Hall.
Oh, it seems odd, but never mind.
Society has quite forsaken all how it can cause is, which ends our police courts and abolishes divorces.
Divorce is nearly obsolete in England.
No tolerance we show to undeserving rank and splendor, for the higher his position is, the greater the offender.
That's a maxim that is prevalent in England.
No peer is at our drawing room before the present passes who wouldn't be accepted by the lower middle classes. Each shady dame, whatever be her rank, is bowed out neatly.
In short, this country has been anglicized completely, It really is a fighting what the father hangers riding. We have brought the bunch of chunks by the motherland. In a rate of fighting room, she is England, but in the room, she turns to the officer of our motherland.
We have beautified, we've done it willy-nilly, and all that isn't Belgrave Square is fair and Piccadilly.
We have the Danish summer in England.
We've solved the labour question with discrimination polished. The poverty is obsolete and hunger is abolished.
We are going to abolish it in England.
The Chamberlain, our native sage, has heard beyond the question of risky situation and indelicate suggestion. No peace is tolerated if it's costumed indiscreetly.
In short, this happy country has been anglicized completely. It's really a surprising what the father anglicized. We have brought the bunch of children by the motherland. In a regular fighting for which he is England, we have brought the bunch of children by the motherland.
Our peerage we remodeled on an intellectual basis, which certainly is rough on our hereditary races.
We are going to remodel it in England.
The brewers and the cotton laws no longer seek admission, and literary merit meets with proper recognition.
And literary merit does in England.
Who knows that we may count among our intellectual chickens, like you at Earl of Thackeray and perhaps the Duke of Dickens. Lord Fielders and Viscount Millay, when they come, we'll welcome sweetly.
So this happy country has been anglicized completely, It really is a fighting what the father anglicized. We have brought the bunch of children quite an answer left. In our enterprising movement, she is England with improvements, which is dutifully offered to our master left. It really is a fighting what the father anglicized. We have brought the bunch of children quite an answer left. In our enterprising movement, she is England with improvements, which is dutifully offered to our master left.
Now then for our first drawing room. Where are the princesses? What an extraordinary thing it is that since European looking glasses have been supplied to the royal bedrooms, my daughters are invariably late.
Sir, their royal highnesses with the Lady Sophie await your pleasure in the anteroom.
Oh, then request our royal household to do us the favor to enter at once.
Thank you.
attempt a very solemn ceremony, so no giggling, if you please. Now, my Lord Chamberlain, we are ready.
Then, ladies and gentlemen, places, if you please. His Majesty and their Royal Highnesses in front of the throne, and His Majesty will be so obliging as to embrace all the debutants.
What? Must I really?
Absolutely indispensable.
More jam for the Paris Peeper. Now, is everyone in his place?
Everyone is in his place.
Then let the revels commence.
The success of English customs at the court has been observed by Scafio and Fantis, who, to say the least, are not best pleased.
be, by sighting every hound at me, in which we both engage.
They do.
In which we both engage.
We think it is our turn.
We do.
We think our turn has come.
We do.
These Englishmen, they must prepare to seek at once their native heir. The king is heretofore, we swear, shall be beneath our thumb.
He shall.
Shall be beneath our thumb.
He shall.
For this was a bee, and this will do. If you'll back me, then I'll back you. So this will do. So this was a bee. So this was a bee.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, yes. This unseemly display of energy within the royal precincts is altogether unpardonable. Pray, what do you complain of?
What do we complain of? Why, through the innovations introduced by the flowers of progress, all our harmless schemes for making a provision for our old age are ruined.
Ruined?
Our matrimonial agency is at a standstill.
Standstill?
Our cheap sherry business is in bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy?
Our army clothing contracts are paralyzed.
Paralyzed?
And even our society paper, the Palace Peeper, is practically defunct.
Defunct?
Defunct? Is that so, dear? Dear, I am truly sorry.
Are you aware that Sir Bailey Barr has introduced a law of libel by which all editors of scurrilous newspapers are publicly flogged, as in England? And six of our editors have resigned in succession. Now, the editor of a scurrilous paper can stand a good deal. He takes a private thrashing as a matter of course. It's considered in his salary. But no gentleman likes to be publicly flogged.
Naturally, I shouldn't like it myself.
Then our burlesque theatre is absolutely ruined.
Dear me, well, theatrical property is not what it was.
Are you aware that the Lord Chamberlain, who has his own views as to the best means of elevating the national drama, has declined to license any play that is not in blank verse and 300 years old, as in England?
And as if that wasn't enough. The county councillor has ordered a 4-foot wall to be built up right across the proscenium in case of fire, as in England.
It's so hard on the company, who are liable to be roasted alive, and this has to be met by enormously increased salaries, as in England.
You probably know that we've contracted to supply the entire nation with a complete English outfit. But perhaps you do not know that when we send in our bills, our customers plead liability, limited to a declared capital of 18 pence, and apply to be dealt with under the Winding Up Act, as in England.
Really, gentlemen, this is very irregular. If you will be so good as to formulate a detailed list of your grievances in writing, addressed to the Secretary of Utopia Limited, they will be laid before the board in due course at their next monthly meeting.
Are we to understand that we are defied?
That is the idea I intended to convey.
Defied? We are defied.
Take care, you know our powers. Trifle with us, and you die.
If you think that we're banded in unity, we may both be defied with impunity. You are sadly misled of a verity. If you value repose and tranquility, you revert to a state of docility, or prepare to regret your temerity.
If my speech is unduly refractory, you may find it, of course, satisfactory. At an early board meeting, you show it up. Though with proper excuse you can company, you may wind up a limited company. You cannot conveniently blow it up. Whene'er I chance to baffle you, I also dance a step or two. Of this now guess the hill and fence. Of this now guess the hill and fence.
It means complete indifference.
Of course it does, of course it does.
It means complete indifference.
Indifference, indifference, indifference.
As we the dance on every move, we part as well, we will conclude. So this we mean you all may get. It is advice, remorse to death, remorse to death, remorse to death.
It means a lot for cheerfulness.
Remorse to death, remorse to death. It's hit by remorse to death.
He's right. We are helpless. He's no longer a human being. He's a corporation. Yes. And so long as he confines himself to his articles of association, we can't touch him. What are we to do?
Do? Raise the revolution. Repeal the Act of 62. Reconvert him into an individual and insist on his immediate expulsion. Tarora, come here. You're the very man we want.
Certainly. Allow me.
A cracker? Pa.
That's rude.
We have no time for idle forms. Listen. You wish to succeed to the throne.
Naturally.
Then you won't unless you join us. Hmm? The king has defied us, and as matters stand, we are helpless.
so are you. We must devise some plot at once to bring the people about his ears.
A plot?
Yes, a plot of superhuman subtlety. Have you such a thing about you?
No, I think not. No, there's one on my dressing table.
We can't wait. We must concoct one at once and put it into execution without delay. There is not a moment to spare.
With wily brain upon the spot a private plot we'll plan. The most ingenious private plot in private plots began. That's understood so far we got, and striking while the iron's hot. We'll now determine like a shot the details of this private plot.
I think we ought.
Such was I never heard of happy thought.
It is.
So what will you get, sir? I'll take you home. Why, what put that in your head? I've got it now. Oh, take him away to bed. Oh, put him to bed. Oh, put him to bed.
What put me to bed?
Yes, suddenly put him to bed.
But bless me, don't you see?
Do listen to me, I pray. It suddenly seems to me,
for this is the only way.
It's rubbish absurd. You growl, you talk ridiculous stuff.
You're a goodly bounder.
You're a vapid and vain, so rough.
You're a vain, so rough. You're a goodly bounder.
You're a goodly vain, so rough. You're a goodly bounder. You're a goodly bounder. So far, we haven't quite solved the plot. There's not a very ingenious plot, but don't be unhappy, it's still on the tabby, but presently he's on the capital plot.
Suppose we all...
Now, there, I think you're right. Then we might all... That's true, we suddenly might. I'll tell you what...
We will if we possibly can, then on the spot.
Bravo, a capital plan.
That's exceedingly neat and new.
Exceedingly new and neat. And fancy that will do.
It's suddenly very complete.
Well done, you science man. Bravo, you cunning old bone.
You very ingenious cat.
You intellectual, intellectual soul.
You very ingenious cat. You very ingenious, intellectual, intellectual cat.
That's the capital plan we got. We won't say how and we won't say what. It's taking my novel now off. We will throttle and gladly develop this capital plot. And that's the capital plan we got. We won't say how and we won't say what. It's taking my novel now off. We will throttle and gladly develop this capital plot.
Well, Goldberry, of what do you think of our first South Pacific drawing room, allowing for a slight difficulty with the trains and a little want of familiarity with the use of the rouge pot? It was, on the whole, a meritorious affair.
My dear Dramaly, it redounds infinitely to your credit.
One or two judicious innovations, I think.
Admirable. The cup of tea and the plate of mixed biscuits were a cheap and effective inspiration.
Yes, my idea entirely. Never been done before.
Mm. Pretty little maids, the king's youngest daughters, but timid.
That'll wear off. Young.
That'll wear off. Ah, here they come, by George. And without the dragon, what can they have done with her?
Oh, if you please, Lady Sophie has sent us in here because Zara and Captain Fitzbattleaxe are going on in the garden in a manner which no well-conducted young ladies ought to witness.
Indeed, we are very much obliged to her ladyship.
Are you? I wonder why. Don't tell us if it's rude.
Rude? Not at all. We are obliged to Lady Sophie because she has afforded us the pleasure of seeing you.
I don't think you ought to talk to us like that. It's calculated to turn our heads. Attractive girls cannot be too particular.
Oh, pray, pray do not take advantage of our unprotected innocence.
Pray be reassured. You are in no danger whatever.
But may I ask, is this extreme delicacy, this shrinking sensitiveness, a general characteristic of utopian young ladies?
Oh, no. We are crack specimens.
We are the pick of the basket.
Oh.
Oh, would you mind not coming quite so near? Thank you.
And please don't look at us like that. It unsettles us.
And we don't like it. At least we do like it, but it's wrong.
We have enjoyed the inestimable privilege of being educated by a most refined and easily shocked English lady on the very strictest English principles.
But my dear young lady...
Oh, don't, you mustn't. It's too affectionate. It really does unsettle us.
Are you really under the impression that English girls are so ridiculously demure? Why, an English girl of the highest type is the best, the most beautiful, the bravest, and the brightest creature that heaven has conferred upon this world of ours. She is frank, open-hearted, and fearless, and never shows in so favorable a light as when she gives her own blameless impulses full play.
Oh, your shocking story.
Not at all. I am speaking the strict truth. I'll tell you all about her.
A wonderful joy our eyes do bless in her magnificent comeliness. Is an English girl of 11 stone 2 and 5 foot 10 in her dancing shoe. She follows the hounds and on she hounds. The field tails off and the muffs diminish. Over the hedges and brook she bounds, straight as a crow from prime to finish. At cricket her kin will lose or win. She and her maids on grass and clover, 11 maids out, 11 maids in, and perhaps an occasional maiden over. Oh, go search the world and search the sea, and come you home and sing with me. There's no such gold and no such pearl as a bright and beautiful English girl. With a 10-mile spin, she stretches her limbs. She golfs, she punts, she rolls, she swims. She plays, she sings, she dances too. From 10 or 11 till all is blue. At ball or drum, till small hours come, chaperones, phantoms, seals her yawning. She'll walk away like a teetotum and never go home till daylight's dawning. Lawn tennis may share her favors fair. Her eyes are dark and her cheeks are glowing. Down comes her hair, but what does she care? It's all her own and it's worth the showing. Ah, go search the world and search the sea, then come you home and sing with me. There's no such gold and no such pearl as a bright and beautiful English girl. Her soul is sweet as the ocean air, for prudery knows no haven there. To find mock modesty, please apply to the conscious blush and the downcast eye. Rich in the things contentment brings, in every pure enjoyment wealthy, blithe as a beautiful bird she sings, for body and mind are hale and healthy. Her eyes, they thrill with right goodwill. Her heart is light as a floating feather, as pure and bright as a mountain rill that leaps and laughs in the highland heather. Ah, go search the world and search the sea, then come you home and sing with me. There's no such gold and no such pearl as a bright and beautiful English girl.
Then I may sing and play.
You may.
And I may rock and chant.
No doubt.
If less than you and yours.
Of course.
You won't be terrified. Then I may sing and play. And I may love and love. You won't be terrified.
What?
Whatever you are, be that. Whatever you may be true, straightforward the act, be honest in fact, be nobody else but you. Give every answer pat, your character to unfurl, and when it is right, you'll then be a type of the capital English girl.
Who treats what pride with a delight? Who fancy, and it's really quite full. Must be rude to fight for a market on the nation. Who treats what pride with a delight? Who fancy, and it's really quite full. Must be rude to fight for a market on the nation. Right.
So the girls dance away with their new tutors, whose lessons seem more to their liking than those of their governess, Lady Sophie, whom we now find meditating alone. But not quite alone, for she's secretly observed by the king.
And I feel still shorter, tighter.
no. And as far as the china above me, it's freezing. Wildly roam through the city bruited, remain uncontradicted, unrefuted. The object thou of my aversion rooted, repulsive thing.
Be just, the time is now at hand when truth may published be. These paragraphs were written and contributed by me.
By you? No, no.
Yes, yes, I swear, by me. I caught in scapula's ruthless toil, contributed the loss.
And that is why you did not foil the author on the spot.
And that is why I did not foil the author on the spot.
I couldn't think why you did not foil the author on the spot.
I know very well why I did not
foil him on the spot. All rapture unrestrained, all candid recitation of the father and her saint, a convincing explanation. The clouds have gathered o'er all and vanished in the distance. And the things of fairy lore, one at least is in existence. The things of fairy lore, one at least is in existence.
So the skies are blue above, and the earth is red and rosy. Now the lady of my love has accepted my proposal. For the death in northern ponds I have crossed without assistance. And a prudish pair of gongs, one at least is in existence. A prudish pair of gongs, one at least is in existence.
All is well, and the king and Lady Sophie dance together. Meantime, the king and Lady Sophie have been observed by our other lovers, Zara and Fitzbattleaxe, Nakaya and Dramaly, and Goldberry and Kaliba. They declare themselves, and after a moment's hesitation, the king and Lady Sophie join them in a wild and joyful dance, a tarantella.
Down with it.
What means this most unmannerly eruption? Is this your gratitude for boons conferred?
Boons? Bah! A fickle for such boons, say we.
These boons have brought Utopia to a standstill.
Our pride and boast, the army and the navy, have both been reconstructed and remodeled upon so irresistible a basis that all the neighboring nations have disarmed and wars impossible.
Your county councillor has passed such drastic sanitary laws that all the doctors dwindle, starve, and die.
The laws remodeled by Sir Bailey Barr have quite extinguished crime in litigation.
The lawyers starve, and all the jails are let as model lodgings for the working classes.
In short, Utopia, swamped by dull prosperity, demands that these detested flowers of progress be sent about their business and affairs restored to their original complexion.
My daughter, this is a very unpleasant state of things. What is to be done?
I don't know. I don't understand it. We must have omitted something.
Omitted something? Yes, that's all very well. But what...
Of course. Now I remember. Why, I had forgotten the most essential element of all.
And that is?
Government by party. Introduce that great and glorious element, at once the bulwark and foundation of England's greatness, and all will be well. No political measures will endure, because one party will assuredly undo all that the other party has done. Why, grouse is to be shot, and foxes worried to death, legislative action in the country will be at a standstill. Then there will be sickness in plenty, endless lawsuits, crowded jails, interminable confusion in the army and the navy, and in short, general and unexampled prosperity.
Unica!
But an hour will come.
Your hour has come already. Away with them. And let them wait my will. From this moment, government by party is adopted with all its attendant blessings. And henceforward, Utopia will no longer be a monarchy limited, but what is a great deal better, a limited monarchy.
There's a little group of isles beyond the wave, so tiny you might almost wonder where it is. That nation is the bravest of the brave, and cowards of the river, so where it is. The proudest nation, feel at her command, take him by the foreign-born rascallion, and hold the peace of Europe in her hand, with half a score invincible battalion.
All her maxims wise, and imitate her virtues and her charities. And may we by degrees acclimatize her parliamentary peculiarities. By doing so, we shall in course of time regenerate completely our entire land. Great Britain is that monarchy is sublime, to which some and but others do not Ireland.
Complete performance of Utopia Limited by W.S. Gilbert and Arthur Sullivan, King Paramount I was played by Peter Pratt. Scafio was sung by Derek Hammond Stroud and spoken by Rolf Lefevre. Fantis was sung by Eric Schilling and spoken by Aubrey Woods. Tarara was sung by John Frost and spoken by Wilfred Carter. Lord Drumalee was sung by David Price and spoken by Hamlin Benson. Captain Fitzbattleaxe was sung by Kenneth Byrne and spoken by Peter Howell. Captain Sir Edward Corcoran, KCB, was sung by Donald Frankie. Mr. Goldberry was sung by Leslie Fison and spoken by Frederick Treves, who also played Callings. Sir Bailey Barr, QCMP, was sung by Edgar Fleet, Mr. Blushington by John Noble. The Princess Zara was sung by Patricia Reeks and spoken by Sheila Manahan. Princess Nakaya was sung by Joanne Brown and spoken by Wendy Lovelock. Princess Kaliba was played by Jane Wenham.